Welcome to another episode of Thinking Like a Bank, where we show you how to think like a bank by applying the same strategies and principles that banks use to help you find more financial freedom in your life. I'm your host, Sari Ibrahim.
Today, I'm interviewing John Ensley. John is leading a financial planning revolution to help you take back control of your money, your lifestyle, and your retirement plan. John believes ordinary financial planning is failing too many Americans. After losing almost everything during the Great Recession, John became obsessed with finding safe, predictable ways to save and create wealth, protected from the chaos and corruption of the conventional financial system. Founded in 2012, John is president of J. Ensley Financial, a fiduciary financial planning company and registered investment advisor. John holds a chartered financial consultant designation from the American College of Financial Services, passed the rigorous Series 65 Investment Advisor Law Exam, and is one of the elite, highly trained bank-on-yourself professionals.
Hey, John, welcome to our podcast.
Sorry, thanks for having me here. I'm super excited.
Yeah, I'm excited to interview you. For the audience to know that you and I are both bank-on-yourself professionals. We're part of the same bank-on-yourself group, so it's awesome having other bank-on-yourself professionals on this podcast. I've had like probably four or five other bank-on-yourself professionals on this podcast. It just makes it easier to talk about bank-on-yourself, right? Which is probably going to be the topic of today's episode, bank-on-yourself, but more from your world, you know, your view. Before we get into that, I want to know more about your background and how you found out about bank-on-yourself.
Sure, absolutely. So my story with banking yourself really begins quite some time ago. I worked for a company in the late 90s that was anybody that was in any corporate world in the late 90s will remember what a time that was. We were planning to do an IPO, and I had some stock options and an ESOP plan and so forth. And so it was a super exciting time. And then, of course, that whole thing just deflated like a balloon with a hole in it when the dot-com bubble crashed. But I left that company with somewhat substantial amounts in that ESOP. Mm-hmm. And did some calculations back then and determined that if I kept that money in the system, so to speak, rolled it over into an IRA or something like that, I was going to pay a whole lot of tax later in my life. And so I decided a better route would be in real estate. Mm-hmm. So I liquidated that ESOP and I took that cash and I started developing a small subdivision, a 5-lot subdivision. And the plan was to build spec homes. And of course, anyone that was in real estate in the early 2000s knows what a exciting, thrilling time that was, right? Everything was going up, 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 up. I had as if appraisals that these, you know, properties, once I built the homes on them, are just going to be worth a fortune. And it was exciting. So I was about halfway through building the first of those spec homes in 2008. So you can probably get an idea where this is headed. And a number of other things happened in that project with some cost overruns. And I ended up bringing on some debt because I could tell what was happening and I was kind of chased it, right? I wanted to get this thing done. But in the end of the day, it all imploded. The lots were virtually worthless at that point. And, the whole thing basically imploded. So it was a huge failure, mm-hmm. At that juncture, and I really hit kind of rock bottom, financially, personally, professionally. I had a day job at the time in sales, but, mm-hmm. during the Great Recession, my income basically dropped by about half.
Oh, wow.
Because of the reduction in spending that my customers were implementing. So it was just, everything just fell apart. Divorce, kids having problems, the property project fell apart, all of it. So that was a real wake-up call for me. And as I kind of dragged myself out of that pit and went on what I call a journey of self-discovery. So I basically jumped into books, podcasts and channels and blogs and all of that too, but literally hundreds of books. And in the course of all of that, I began to finally learn some things and wake up to some of the realities around me and how kind of some things work. And I was on a webinar late one night. in the course of all of this studying, and there was an advisor on the call, and he was walking through an example, and it had this couple and their house and their home equity. And then he started talking about a life insurance policy and how they were building up cash value in their life insurance mm-hmm. policy. And he mapped this out over like 30 years. And, you know, I hated life insurance. I hated the whole idea of life insurance, right? Why do I want to be worth more dead than alive? And so this was a brand new concept for me. It is mm-hmm. this idea that life insurance could somehow be something other than just a death benefit. Mm-hmm. And so that was, that set me back in my seat a little bit, and I began to pay attention. Well, what's this all about? And somewhere in that presentation, I think he uttered the words infinite banking.
Yeah.
And so Google searching, right? I jump online, I start looking for more information. And that led me to Nelson Nash's fantastic book, Becoming Your Own Banker. And then at the almost exactly the same time, Pamela Yellen's first book, Bank on Yourself. So that was my introduction to Bank on Yourself. Within a short period of time, I set up my first policy and started using it, met with a Bank on Yourself professional in my area and got that going. And shortly after that, I just got really passionate about this whole concept. And, you know, over the years, I had been to many, many, many advisors, and none of them had ever mentioned this idea to mm-hmm. me. You know, even though with some of the things I was talking about with the real estate projects and so forth, it seems like somebody should have mentioned that this was an option. Mm-hmm. And so I decided, well, you know, nobody's really finding out about this. And really, every American family should have this in their financial plan somewhere. And so I decided I was ready for a career change. And so in 2012, I launched my practice, Jay Inslee mm-hmm. Financial. Mm-hmm. And now I help people, you know, understand what this concept is about and how to implement it for themselves.
So it was Bank on Yourself that brought you into the overall financial services world for you to become a chartered financial consultant. Series 65, that's what got you into the financial services world.
That is correct. Yep. It was a complete career change. I had no background in this industry, just jumped in with both feet. And frankly, the first year and a half or so, I fell flat on my face.
Mm-hmm. I mean, which everyone does, right?
Yep, absolutely. And so it's definitely been a learning curve, but it's been an awesome, it's hard for me to believe it's been over a decade.
That's awesome. And you're so right. Like, I think every financial advisor should mention this, but obviously they don't, right? Because I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but in the financial services world, there's kind of two sides, right? There's like the side we're on, there's insurance, there's annuities, you know, there is investments and assets under management. And then the other side is fee only, which is no insurance at all, just stocks, mm-hmm. bonds, mutual funds, IRAs, brokerage accounts. And there tends to be like a blinder on for one side or the other. I think that we're pretty liberal on our side. We're open to talking about stocks, bonds, mutual funds. But the other side, I feel like, is like, you know, once they hear insurance, they're like, you don't need it. Just do term insurance. About last week, I wrote a post on LinkedIn talking about how term life insurance can be more expensive than whole life insurance. Especially if you go beyond the term period, like the 10-year, 20-year, 30-year period. Mm-hmm. So, and I think this brings it right to conventional financial planning. So do you mind breaking down like what is conventional financial planning and how are you different and how are you trying to be different?
Well, this was the fascinating part for me in getting the Chartered Financial Consultant designation and studying for and passing the Series 65 is essentially I went out and got all the training that a conventional financial planning mm-hmm. professional gets, even though I started my practice without that and got training kind of, we'll say, outside the box. Mm-hmm. And so then I went out and got the inside the box training. And this is something I share with clients all the time when we talk about other advisors they may be working with and so forth, is that I don't think there's really like a sinister plan or mm-hmm. that, you know, these are really good people and with really great intentions, yes. but they're products of their training. And of course that training is designed to follow a certain path. And so I think it's unfortunate that there's a divide because mm-hmm. there really should be a combination of both sides of that line in most cases. So having that training was a real eye-opener. Conventional planning is really based on, it's based on a modern portfolio theory. There's a lot of very highbrow mathematics that go into, you know, people will pick, a reasonable person would want a portfolio that's somewhere north of the free asset, you know, the risk-free asset line, and their risk tolerance. And yeah, you know, I refer to it sometimes as voodoo math, you know, because I think it disconnects from the real world of what people actually want. So how that trickles down to a conventional financial planner is they're using software, they're plugging information in, and based on modern portfolio theory and some other things, the Monte Carlo simulations spit out a solution, and they plug it in, and that's it. I refer to it as cookie cutter planning. So it's unique to each client, but it doesn't really take into account what that client actually wants to accomplish. Right. It's based on getting a mix of returns, whatever that means, from a mix of stocks and bonds to arrive at a number. But it never ties together how that equates to buying a sailboat and sailing around the world for the first 5 years of your retirement. It never equates to taking the kids on that, you know, cross country RV trip. It never, right? It doesn't equate to what people actually want to do. It just equates to these kind of arbitrary numbers. So that's kind of how I differentiate it with what I do. Is the first thing I want to understand is, what does someone want? What do you want to do? What do you want that money to do for you? What do you want it to create in your life? What experiences do you want? Do you want that to happen? Then let's map out a path to get there. Rather than plugging your risk tolerance score into a piece of software that then spits out a mix of mutual funds. So it's just a much different approach.
Absolutely. And in this, you know, with this voodoo math, right, a lot of advisors consider average rates of return. So like they'll take, for example, what the S&P 500 did, or another index, what it did over the last like 20 years, right? Like the pluses and minuses, find the average for that, and then go to a financial calculator and then type in what this account could do in the next 20 years, future value based off of the average rate of return. But then mathematically, that doesn't work, right? Because prior, it included the pluses and minuses, but future, you'd have to also include that same sequence of returns, not just take the average from there. Well, the math won't come out. Yeah, exactly. So I think that that's a big problem. And a lot of times, like I talk to clients all the time, and they say, yeah, on my stocks, in my mutual fund account, I'm getting, you know, 10.5%. And I'll be like, how did you reach that? Like, how was that calculated? And they go, oh yeah, it's the average in the portal, in the brokerage portal, whatever whichever online portal they're using. So I think that's a big gap between what people are actually getting out of their accounts. And then on top of all of that is that you can't guarantee that, obviously, right? It's not a certain. So that means that what if you only reach 60% of your goal or 50% of your goal? Well, that means now you have to change your traveling goals. You have to change where you're going to live. You're living according to the stock market.
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons I say that if you don't control some of these factors, it just comes down to luck. Some people are going to get lucky. Most aren't. And it's, this average rate of return, I love that the discussion, anything around that. I just worked with a client recently, and I had them send me December 31 statements for the last 8 years. So I had their year end statements, and the most recent one said 13.31% was your average 3-year return. Okay. So I did the analysis, and I started pulling out what were their contributions, what were matches, et cetera. And I put it all in, put it on a sheet. And at that point in time, they had about $4,000 less than their contributions.
So they were negative. They were negative.
Yeah. They were less than they started with, but yet their statement showed a 13.31% 3-year average return. And I'm sure that this is a very large brokerage company in the country. I am sure they have an equation that will verify that number is quote unquote correct. Even though you got less money than you started with, right? So there's a real disconnect with what these numbers mean. And of course, the average person opens up their statement, takes a look, 13.3 run looks good, throw it in the shredder, and they don't think about it anymore, right? They just think they're good to go. 13%. Awesome.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's where the majority of people are. Like, they're not alone. That's mm-hmm. that's where a lot of people are at. Yep. And this is why it's really important to work with an advisor like yourself who can go through the math and show them. And it's not based off what you think the rate of return is. It's based off of what a calculator says.
Exactly.
The rate of return is. For those listening to the podcast now who are kind of like, yeah, they heard about Bank on Yourself, but they're not really sure exactly what it is. How would you describe it?
So Bank on Yourself to me is it's very, very simple. It is a system. It's a system for saving, investing, and borrowing. And it utilizes the unique features of properly structured whole life insurance contracts to accomplish that. That's really what it is in a nutshell. It's a system to save, invest, and borrow.
I like that. Yeah, system. I also look at it as like a way of living. It's like a way of like, you know, mm-hmm. a financial way of living. It's not really meant to replace investments. If anything, it enhances investments, right?
Yeah, it's that whole conversation of you can't compare a Bank on Yourself plan to a 401k or yeah. to a mutual fund or to real estate investing. It's an and scenario, right? You use the Bank on Yourself plan as a platform to invest in whatever you're into. A ton of people obviously use it for real estate investing.
Yeah.
But if your thing was options trading, great. Use your policy to pull money out and go trade options if mm-hmm. that's your thing. So it's a platform that facilitates whatever kind of investing that you want to do.
And what and like why would somebody want to do that? Why not just skip it and go right into the options trading or the stock trading? Why add that additional step between you and that asset or investment?
That's a great question. And the answer to that is the, again, unique features of these whole life insurance contracts in that we have a guaranteed growth rate as well as a non-guaranteed component mm-hmm. of what that's going to do over a lifetime. So it compounds, right? It keeps going up every year. The value keeps getting greater. And so you can then get that money to almost do two things at the same time, right? I've got it over here growing at a nice, predictable, steady rate, but now I've got a piece of it that I put over here and I'm taking some risk over here, mm-hmm. right? And I've got a piece of it I put over here where I'm doing this thing I like to do, whether it's options or flipping houses or, you know, whatever somebody's interest is. Now, a really good example, right? Had I known about this in the early 2000s when I liquidated the money from that ESOP, mm-hmm. had I been able to put that money into a Bank on Yourself plan, right? But at that point, nobody had told me about that.
Mm-hmm.
I could have been my own bailout plan,
mm-hmm.
right? Let's say the whole thing still went south and imploded and I had the loans against the policy. All I had to do, I have all the time in the world to pay those back, right? Because right. I choose the terms. Once I dug myself out of that hole and paid those loans off, I would have recovered all my cash mm-hmm. and I would have gotten all the growth on that cash. If it took me 10 years to do it, I would have still gotten 10 years worth of growth on all that money. So I could have been my own bailout plan, you know, if I had had a Bank on Yourself type policy in place at the time.
Right. Exactly. Like the policy would have kept growing uninterrupted during yep. that time. And even I wouldn't be surprised that depending on how much you had in it, you would still probably be able to take out some money out of it, even with that outstanding loan, because the dividends would be kicking in.
For sure. And you're paying it down and that's freeing up more cash. And right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
it would have completely transformed that experience, even if it turned out to be the disaster that it was.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Same disaster, but different tools were used.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It kind of hedges your bets.
Right, right, right. Yeah, I really think I try to talk to a lot of real estate investors about this. I think that especially real estate, I think a lot of real estate investors should use this, become essentially their own mortgage or become their own, you know, their own mm-hmm. banker within these syndications and real estate funds. What are some kind of unique ways you've seen it or your clients have used Bank on Yourself? Kind of like one unique story or a cool story you want to share with us.
Sure. One of my favorite ones was a young guy that I have as a client, or he was a number of years ago, mm-hmm. and he was in the military. He's a pilot, and he had been overseas and had saved up some significant amount of money, and so he heard about Bank on Yourself, and we connected and went through the process, and he set up a policy and funded it early on with a large lump sum, like $100,000, I think mm-hmm. it was. And he literally, we submitted the loan request like 2 days after the policy was issued, and he pulled $80,000 out of that policy and paid off the Tesla that he just bought. Right. And then he's paid that loan off fairly quickly, a couple of years. And he's now doing real estate investments and other things with the cash from the policy. So super simple example, but you know, here's this guy in his 30s that is now sitting on, you know, he's a number of years into his policy now. So maybe he's close to 40 by now, but he's sitting on cash values that he can do other things with. But that initial thing was he went out and financed a Tesla and then paid it off almost immediately. And then paid that loan back to himself, saved thousands of dollars in interest, and gained the growth on all that money the whole time he was paying it back.
Right. Exactly. Now when he wants to do real estate, after that, he can go right to that account that's been growing this whole time, that's been compounding. Doesn't have to qualify for a loan, right? It's right. Whatever the cash value is, you could take out, 90% of the cash value, you pay back on your own terms, it keeps growing. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was a MEC policy, but it could be all tax-free, right?
It was not a MEC policy.
Oh, awesome. Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah. That's even better.
And that's I think people don't understand that sometimes is you can design a non-MEC policy depending on how, every circumstance is unique, but you can design a non-MEC policy with a large lump sum up front. It doesn't have to be a MEC.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And this is why I think and I'm happy that we're both part of the Bank on Yourself group, because there's so many, I feel like there were so many misconceptions about life insurance, cash value life insurance. And Pamela Yellen, put this whole concept together and was like, here are all the things that could go wrong, but we're going to do the opposite of that. So like when you go to your local financial advisor and they say, oh no, don't do a whole life insurance, it would take 20 years to build up cash. Well, that could be true, right? It could take 20
absolutely.
Years.
Absolutely, yep.
but we structure in certain ways that, like you said, you put 100,000 in, within 1 month, you could take out 80,000. Like that's possible. We've done it. We've probably done it for our own own policies, our own clients. So I think, that's wonderful. What are some kind of risks you're seeing today, like in the news, just talking to clients, talking to people? You're like, people need to change this, or they need to do something different because of, this potential risk.
I think we're in uncharted territory. The biggest risk is we don't know what's going to happen, right? We've printed enormous amounts of money. We've got inflation now. Is that a long-term thing? Is that a short-term thing? How's that going to affect the economy? The real estate market seems to be buoying the whole thing pretty well. I think the biggest thing is nobody knows. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think the solutions that we offer as Bank on Yourself professionals, this is a point I make all the time with clients, is don't prepare for this or that. Mm-hmm. Prepare for whatever happens. And that's the position we can be in with the types of strategies that we're implementing is it doesn't really matter whether inflation goes up or deflation hits or crash comes, whatever the case may be, we're kind of prepared for whatever comes. And that's, I think, the biggest thing is to be prepared for whatever comes.
Yeah,
because nobody knows what's going to come.
Yeah, that's a wonderful way of putting it. Exactly. Like, we don't have to, like, if the stock market is up, then we do this, or if it's down, then we do that. It doesn't matter. We're whatever happens. And I think that, in whether inflation happens or deflation or interest rates go up or interest rates go down, either way, the policies play out, right? I know that interest rates are correlated with dividend rates. So if interest rates go up in the future, dividend rates can go up and vice versa. But that's not the point. The point isn't the interest rate or dividend. The point is whatever, like you said, whatever happens, you can stick to your plan. It's not really contingent upon market conditions, which is way more important than it sounds, actually, because it's not a small thing. In other words, like the stock market and has a big impact on people's lives. People going to the hospital, people getting sicker, people dying earlier. Like that's all based off of money and the economy.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And you can tell people are worried.
Yeah.
They don't know what's going to happen because there's some weird things that are going on. And stress is, stress has an impact on people's lives, and financial stress is one of those things that's kind of chronic. It's under the surface. And I think that really can eat away at you. So, the peace of mind that someone can have by, by having some predictability and kind of insulating themselves from that chaos is it's hard to put a value on that.
And how can, and so can you kind of give us an idea of like people reaching out to you? What could they expect from reaching out to you?
I think of myself as an educator. Mm-hmm. I think most people, when they connect with someone online or from a podcast or something like that, they're a little, they're kind of waiting for the sales pitch kind of a thing. Right. So it really doesn't work that way. I start the process with every single person I work with a casual conversation just to get acquainted, find mm-hmm. out if I'm a good fit for what they want and vice versa. Mm-hmm. No sales pitch, no pressure, right? If we're a good fit, it'll be pretty obvious. Yeah. And so I think of myself as an educator. I just want to help people understand these concepts and how it can integrate with their overall plan. And I always stress that, right? We don't want to create that us or them mentality. The bank on yourself concept, the philosophies that we work with should integrate seamlessly with the portion of their portfolio that they want to keep, in the market or in the IRA or whatever. It's not one or the other.
I love that. Yeah, definitely. And how can listeners connect with you?
So I have a page set up at Jump On With John. That's JOHN John. JumpOnWithJohn.com. And you can jump on there and request a quick appointment for us to have a conversation.
JumpOnWithJohn.com?
Yes.
Okay, awesome. I like that. All right, I'm going to add that in the show notes below so the listeners can click and connect with you. And I'll add in some of your other information, like your LinkedIn page and other content. It was a pleasure interviewing you and getting to know you a little bit more. And I'm looking forward to bringing you back on the podcast in the future.
Absolutely. Sounds good. Thanks, Ari. I appreciate it.
Thanks, John.
To learn more about what we do and how we can help you grow more wealth, please visit www.finassetprotection.com. That's F-I-N, assetprotection.com. The topics presented in this podcast are for general information only and not for the purposes of providing legal, accounting, or investment advice. On such matters, please consult a professional who knows your specific situation.